Everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Midnight Ride. This is your host, Hank Alexand, joined once again by the IndirectKick.com's very own Mr. Brendan Schimmel. How are you doing tonight, Brendan?
Too bad, sir. Yourself?
Very well, very well. And it's been a busy week or two since Thanksgiving. There's been a lot of stuff going on in the land of the New England Revolution, which is, I think, called Foxborough.
Currently.
Anyway, no news on that front yet. We hope sometime soon. But right now, all the buzz is about kind of the fallout that's happening from players not being players being waived, options not being picked up, all sorts of trades going on everywhere here and there. Montreal is making a huge splash in this, and granted they've kind of had a year or so to line things up, for this particular scenario here when they get their expansion draft and they've been able to make some trades after that expansion draft and have very kind of all of a sudden are a very legitimate team. If you look at their roster, I'm very impressed with what the team that they've been able to put together. But other than that, as far as the Revs are concerned, the New England Revolution, you're looking at a squad that new head coach Jay Heaps is putting his fingerprints right on this team, right from the get go. He's made a number of roster moves already. Players that were, you know, very much reserve players last season, maybe had a couple of runouts in the Open Cup, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, were not picked up. Their options weren't renewed, picked up, whatever you want to call it. They put a bunch of people out into the re-entry draft and declined options on a bunch of other guys. So, where do we start, Brendan?
It's a lot to process. For a while, there was a lull in activity. Then all of a sudden, a flurry of, you know, this offseason with MLS, and it requires its own show to explain to people, you know, the processes of what reentry actually means, and these euphemisms for free agents and waivers and stuff. So,
right.
I think you got to start with the fact that the guys we released or declined options on, and try to kind of clarify that for people what that actually means.
Let's back up a little bit more than just, we'll go back to expansion draft.
Right? Ah, yes.
Okay, because the Revs ended up going with almost the expansion draft that I would have picked. They did end up picking protecting two goalkeepers again. You know, once bitten, twice shy, I guess, when they lost Brad Knighton.
A lot of you know, verbal bruising going on in the Revs on Twitter and Facebook about that, for them protecting two goalkeepers. What was the logic behind that? And kudos to Jay to come out and throw a trump card and say, look, we know that Preston Burpo likes these guys. We're not going to be bitten twice by it. There's the reason for it. So,
yep.
There's logic going on there, which is a change.
Yeah. And Burpo's, he's brought in a lot of keepers up there, and he's doing well up there, Preston, as the goalkeeper coach. And, you know, we'll have to see how well it all turns out. But, you know, I'd see a big drop off in talent between Brad Knighton and Bob Shuttleworth. I as much as I want to believe in the potential that Bob Shuttleworth has, I thought Brad Knighton was a big loss for this team. So, I mean, I can see why they, you know, don't want to go through that scenario again and then have to break in another goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with the healthy Matt Reese, you protect him. I guess I'm more upset that they protected an injured Matt Reese 2 years ago when he probably wouldn't have been picked up at his salary, where he wasn't going to play for more than half the year. So,
I think, I don't know if I can judge Bobby Shuttleworth well enough. I think most of the time he's in, I'm usually cutting him slack because it was a ridiculous defensive mistake or somebody left completely unopened. So I don't know if I can, if I'm cutting him slack or I'm not really putting him under the microscope just yet, because I don't think we've had an adequate defense surrounding him
right
to accurately gauge him.
Right, and he's had some incredibly good saves, I have to say. He's a very capable athlete, and I think he needs some time to win over the fans like me, like you, and well, maybe it'll happen.
What's the metric you're using to judge goalies? It's a tough metric to use, because people will use winning percentage. You have save percentage. You have saves. You have – oh, remember that awesome save he made? I mean, if somebody's making a lot of saves, that means they're taking a lot of shots.
It means they're being put in a position where they're being forced into – making a ton of saves.
So what do you say? Save percentage or goals against average is the best way to do it?
You know, it's hard because I think it's goals allowed, to be honest. And but that's a reflection really on the whole defense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, save percentage is great. You know, number of saves is probably a better stat. And if he's making 6-7 saves in a game, that's, you know, and yet, who's counting it as save is the other question, right? So it gets into semantics as to what qualifies as an actual save.
I can't understand how a shot that hits the post isn't considered a shot on net.
It boggles
my mind, but it's tough to gauge it, but you got to take into account a lot of stuff with goalies. And
yep.
I think with Matt, the thing I look at is more or less, you know, locker room presence. He's probably one of the funniest guys I've ever met on the team, hands down, and just... I mean, I think I would have liked to see him wear a captain's band after, you know, Shaw Reed got arrested in the offseason. I think that's, you know, a step you could have took. But whether or not Matt has the assertive side to him, who knows?
Right. And so, let's go back and take a look at the rest of this. I think Matt, I agree with you, by the way. Matt is, he's the vice captain always, I believe. And in a pinch, he would definitely serve as the so they protected along with the two goalkeepers, they protected Kevin Alston, which I wasn't surprised about, to be honest, as much as his performance this year was maybe questionable. Benny Failhaber, not surprised. Shaori Joseph, not surprised. Ryko Lekic, not surprised. Stephen McCarthy was a bubble player for me. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, maybe that they would go somewhere else from that one. Maybe use that spot to protect Milton Caraglio. But once I saw Milton's name not on this list, I pretty much knew that they weren't going to pick up the option there.
Yeah, I think they were daring people to get involved.
Yeah,
go ahead. Get involved in this ridiculous loan thing. About. History exactly. Loan 2011.
Exactly. Sandy Nyasi, you know, I had him. I think I had him on my list as a guy that Montreal would go for, just because of his speed. And for that reason, I would protect him because we don't have anybody as fast as Sandy Nyasi on this team. And if they can get him to, you know, come on late in games, maybe as a forward or an attacking player that can burn defenses, I'd say keep him. So he's a weapon. If they learn how to use him right, if they can maybe increase his production per minutes played, I'd be happy with him. Matt Reese, Bobby Shuttlesworth, we talked about. AJ Soares, not surprised. Tierney, not surprised. Mazza Zirka. I was very glad to see that they protected him. Now I want to make sure that they can re-sign him. I don't know what his... they did not pick up the option on him, I believe, or did they?
They turned down the option on...
They did.
They have Dubé, Cochran, and Phelan, who they've released the reentry process. Mm-hmm. And then the options have been turned down on, I believe it was Caraglio, Zirka, and...
Caraglio, Lekic, Correa.
Correa. Yeah, Correa, I think there's something a little more... They've actually declined the option.
Right.
And I don't think they really want to renegotiate that one, and I can't fault... I mean, Correa started off the season good, and whether or not he was hampered by those knee injuries consistently throughout, at the end of the day, you know, the juice wasn't worth the squeeze.
Right, right. So, I mean, that was a... you know, tall ask, I think, for them to even think about keeping all those guys, especially with all these various loan deals, et cetera, that they've they've got going on. Now, so if they've decided after all that, they waived Alan Cogar, Otto Lowy, and Andrew Souza.
Can we just talk about how good Steve's article in the Ben Musket was about the ridiculousness of not letting these guys get a chance to play at the senior level before cutting them?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think for Cogar and Souza, yes. Otto is a nice, one of the nicest guys I've ever talked to. But I don't think he was really ever an option. Having watched him play a little bit, he's a better soccer player than I am. I'll give him that. And
the Man United game, he got exposed, but I mean, it was Man United.
Yeah, and he was in there because he was a warm body. He had a pulse. To be honest, I mean, there was no other reason. The boys had another game coming up that week. Whatever they needed to, they didn't need two games in a week against such a high caliber team either. And let's be honest there. I mean, Otto, the team never really had huge expectations for Otto. I mean, they had so many times where they were down, injured players, injured defenders, and guys out, and they didn't even bring him on the bus, you know, or bring him out to Kansas City for various games. And, you know, I was just, as soon as I saw that, I said, well, okay, so this guy's really, he's on the practice squad. That's why he's here. Which is, you know, like I said, I hope he maybe signs up with a USL team or a, you know, NASL team. Cause you know, he's a good guy and he did his job here. And, I think, you know, he could probably make it in the lower leagues as a serviceable, you know, defender.
Or he could turn up starting for another team, a la
Sesanovic, who's,
he's got an interesting story. He had the news that Sesanovic contemplated retirement when he was selected by Montreal.
And that speaks a lot, actually, to maybe why he didn't fit in here at New England. I always watched him on the field. He was very fiery. He would argue with his teammates on the pitch and talk back to the coaches. But I respect that if he knows what he's talking about. But I just, maybe he just didn't really always fit in here. That's me making my own.
Article had painted it that it was a tumultuous 8-month period where he was actually re-signed by the Revs last January, cut by the Revs, trial with a bunch of teams, and finally made it into a place where he's getting consistent minutes. It happens to be his hometown of Kansas City.
And he's a lot happier there.
Yeah, he gets yanked in the by Montreal, and then Montreal ends up trading him back to Kansas City for Davey Arnault.
Yeah, as opposed to the and his retirement threat, if you want to call it that, you know, Sesanovic's retirement threat obviously played a little bit better off for him than it did for Brian Ching.
that's the only thing that's cool about the protection process is it's a really like an interesting game of chess and who wants to make it the most personal, because it can get ugly in the future when people
are putting
misinformation out there and saying, oh, I'm going to retire, this, that, people calling bluffs. There's a lot in play, like people's lives.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and you got to give the Revolution credit there for, you know, protecting Matt Rhys 2 years ago when he was out for over half of the season with shoulder surgery, knee surgeries, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. They had to go get Preston Burpo and traded away the rights to Jeff Lorenowitz and Wells Thompson. And we all know how that turned out for Colorado and how it didn't turn out for the Revs. And we all remember watching Preston break his leg on that dreadful day where, was it Dane Richards? It was.
It's the Red Bulls. The only positive about that whole thing was that whole trade. I mean, Corey Gibbs had a really nice Lamborghini to look at.
That he did.
Preston played well, too.
He had a great season. And, you know, I think with a different midfield and different components, that team might have... Never mind. It's done.
It's gone. It's really gone. It's not even last season gone. Two seasons gone.
But it's funny. I like talking about these players, and I just want to say this because a lot of people out there were harping about how what a jerk Jesse Marsh was for taking Brian Ching. And I was listening to a couple of guys on, I think it was the Best Soccer Show, or the show that was formerly the American Soccer Show. And, you know, I'm all for Jesse Marsh taking Brian Ching. That's exactly what he should have done. If, you know, he thought that Brian Ching had value. It's, you know.
Well, in a chess move, the Dynamo are a competing team.
Absolutely.
If you can make Brian Ching retire and not be part of your opposing team's, you know, striking duo, you get Brian Ching and then you hold Houston hostage to get him back. Because, you know, Brian Ching's, you know, agency group's going to be calling Houston going, get him back. Do what you got to do. Sell player XYZ. Get him back. So
it could be a very interesting trade. I'm predicting with no.
I can imagine Houston's got to get rid of. They got to find a way to offload Ching or more money, because the Brad Davises and the Jeff Camerons, they're gotten expensive. I think they're in the 200, 300 range. And they completely deserve that money, but you know, paying your players is good until you're paying a lot of players a lot of money and you don't really have a lot of cap room to move around with.
Ching is, what, 33 now? Something like that. So, I mean, he's getting up there in age, and he can still – but he knows how to win, you know, and he can put himself in a dangerous, you know, position.
Those guys that have just played in MLS that long, they're like – it's hard to measure, another immeasurable stat, that they know the league, they know the players, they know the refs. They kind of – that's a good thing to have on a team, an MLS
player. Yep. And so I could easily see him, Ching, getting traded to another team and then maybe that team trading for him and getting him back to Houston. But I don't know if it'll be a direct Houston to Montreal swap. But, you know, I applaud Jesse Marsh for doing that, and I'm sorry, Houston fans. The only people that you have the right to be mad at is your front office for not protecting your favorite player.
They gambled and they lost.
Yes.
That's the name of the game.
It's their fault, not Montreal's. Sorry. But anyway, let's move on. We'll talk now about our team, the New England Revolution, who...
Whoever's left.
Who's left? My goodness. I mean, we've got some players here that are going into the reentry draft. Ryan Cochran, who we picked up in last year's reentry draft. Pat Phelan, not really surprised. But, you know, is Pat... Let's put Pat to the side for a second, because I want to talk about that. Kelly Dubé. Kelly... Oh, man.
What did he bring to the team last year? Granted, he had whiplash. You know, there was a good time where Kelly Dubé, who was a little older, like, he could have been a starting forward on this team at some point.
Yeah.
I think he might have got a hat trick like 2 years ago. I don't even know how long ago it was, but you forget that this guy was on the bench the entire year or practicing. It's like,
he wasn't even available on the bench for more than half a year.
We can't have people on the bench or on this roster that can't be available to contribute. We can no longer just flow people. I've watched
him for the last 2 years.
It's mind-boggling, and it's frustrating, and it makes me angry.
Yep. For the last 2 years, Kelly Dubé has basically been unavailable for this team.
And let me say, that doesn't include Taylor Twellman. That's a completely different animal.
Yep. You're right. It is a completely different animal. And, you know, we'll wrap it up when we talk here about Pat Phelan, and then we'll move on to the thing after the break. But Pat, I think, is another animal that... He actually may end up retiring. He's had at least 7 concussions, that, in counting the ones that he had last year. And, you know, is a team really going to pick him up in the first round of the reentry draft? And is he going to settle for less money to come back to the Revolution just to keep playing? Where, you know, I look at him and I say, okay, Pat, you know, You're a warrior, you're a bruiser, you like to get out there and mix it up, that's fine, but man, what about your head? You know,
Pat the Hat, I mean...
Pat the Hat.
He gets a lot of guff from fans, but I think they have to understand what they can expect from Pat. Pat's a disruptive defensive midfielder.
That's what he does.
He makes you not want to jump up for head balls. He makes you not want to go in hard for 50-50 balls if you're on the other team. it's an advantageous guy to have, but when we are lacking talent everywhere else, we need more than just a disruptive defensive player at that position. You need a distributor as well.
Yep.
And I think that's his downside. If he was on a team with surrounded by a lot of talent and he was just a complementary piece as opposed to a central focal point, he actually might be a good role. But also, you're talking about personal stuff where I'm sure he's gotten an earful from Taylor as well about his head.
Yep. Yep. So that's going to be an interesting scenario for him. But we've been rambling on for about 20 minutes. So let's take a little break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the re-entry draft coming up and, you know, who we might want to pick out of it. And also some of the other players who the Reds have declined their options. So stick around. We'll be right back after this break. Girl, you thought you found the answer on that magic carpet ride last night. But when you wake up in the morning, the world still gets you uptight.
Well, there's nothing better. This is Danny Beerseed, founder of the Free Beer Movement. Help us build American soccer one beer at a time by visiting www.thefreebeermovement.com. It's American soccer culture with a nice buzz.
This is Darius Barnes, and you're listening to The Midnight Ride.
And we're back. Are we recording? We are recording. We are back on the Midnight Ride. It's Hank and Brendan. Take a sec for a little station identification. MidnightRide.us, new URL for the show. You can email the show at pod@themidnightride.us. And you can even call the show and leave us a number, a message rather, on this number, which is 204 something else. I'll get it for you later. It's 204-339-1775, and I will confirm that number because that was purely out of somewhere near my back pocket. Anyway, the Revolution have a little bit of business still left to do in this offseason, obviously, after basically getting rid of 10, was it 10 players they've in total? I think it was 10 in total. You know, if you count the three that they put up in waivers.
You have
three Holder, going into Lowry, the reentry.
Souza, gone. Dubé, Cochran, Phelan, released the reentry.
Yep.
And then you have Lakic, Zerga, Caraglio, who are who knows, and then we're still waiting Correa. On Shalri.
But then also Correa.
Oh, yeah, Correa, yeah. I've already written him off. That's terrible.
Yep. So that's at least 10. And Shalri, they're you know that they're going to try to get him back because they obviously value him. He's been their leading goal scorer for the last 2 years. Just, you can't let him go. You can't. It's just, why would you let go of your leading goal scorer? And it's... Yeah, he shouldn't be your leading goal scorer. I guess you could make that argument. He shouldn't be.
Too bad he is.
But he is. And, you know, he sets up a lot of goals. He works hard to get the goals that he has. So
I had brought some new friends to the opening game this year, and I was trying to explain to who the captain was, Shalri Joseph. Like, does he score a lot of goals? I go, no, he doesn't score a lot of goals. He's a setup guy. He's like a quarterback. He can just pick somebody out and put the ball on their foot. Literally 4 minutes into that opening game, he proves me correct by launching a 30-yard bomb to Shalosky for a goal. I was like, you see? Yep. I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. But then also, I mean, if you took him to the Rev Army home opener party at the church last season? Where up here in Boston. If you took him to that party and you said, hey, or wherever the Rebellion was having one too, I believe down at
CBS soon.
Is that where you guys had yours?
Yep.
Okay. Well, so if you took him to that and you watched that opening game against Los Angeles, you say, hey, look, there's our captain, Shalri Joseph, just scored a goal. First 3 minutes of the game or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, you say, yeah, that's our guy. But at the same time, he's had a lot of issues off the field, obviously. They're no secret. And he's
there were games they had him at forward.
Yeah.
People seem to forget that this year. We played some musical chairs. I don't know if anyone's watching, but
well, yeah, games where he had to play forward because, you know, they only had one striker. And, you know, basically he was the second striker. Mm-hmm. You got him forward, whatever. And then you have Benny kind of filling in the middle there. And it was a mess for a long time. This team was a real mess. And, you know, a lot of these guys were contributors in that mess, so to speak. I mean, you can't look at Kogar, Lowy, and Souza because they never saw the senior squad. But, you know, Coria was a big part of that. Ryan Cochran, Pat Phelan, all these guys saw a lot of minutes this past season. Kelly Dubé didn't see any minutes on the senior squad, which interesting thing about Kelly Dubé, which when I went down to the last home home reserve game, it was against Columbus Crew, was sitting out there, and Jay Heaps, before he was even, I guess, considered as a coach, maybe he was considering himself as a coach, he had nothing but praise to say about Kelly Dubé, as he was the hardest working guy in the field. And the Revolution had an early 1-0 lead on an Andrew Souza free kick in that game, and then went on to lose the game in the second half 4-1, and it lost a player to a red card as well. So, but the real head scratchers here, I mean, not so much head scratchers, but you look at guys like Lekic and Zirka, who two guys that they went out and protected. The fact that they declined the options but protected them in the first place just says that they want to keep them. And, you know, these two guys, towards the end of the season when they were both healthy and starting to get on the field at the same time, they showed some promise there. There was some good fancy footwork between the two, and along with Shaury and even Milton Caraglio, who I'm pretty sure won't come back because the money option. But you're looking at a couple of guys there that I think the Revs, you know, given that they can get the numbers right to fit them into the squad and the salary cap that they want to work with and the budget that they want to keep, you can see these guys easily coming back.
Yeah, it's another thing that makes it difficult to really throw blame around in this team, because it's almost like a lot of people are a victim of circumstance, where you're in an organization that, even like these guys we talked about, the reserve team, Kogar, Lowy, and Souza, those games on the reserve squad, they're being, you know, thrown together to play positions they're not designed to play.
That's very
true. And even
these
guys on the senior team, if you can't get in the same formation with the same personnel week in, week out, you're not going to develop any chemistry, any style, or make any progress. You got to get guys in roles they're designed to play by trade, and pray to God they stay healthy and get the same 11 week in, week out. Until that happens, I really can't give any real individual blame without throwing some of it Steve Nichols' way, or even at the front office, because there's no excuse for them to walk into that season saying, "Oh, we're still looking at getting a striker." In the meantime, you better have strikers you're confident in playing with, because we have to see Shaury, the best defensive midfielder in MLS, playing forward. We've done something wrong. Right. So credit to Jay Heaps to going before the 2012 season, going on scouting trips to Central America, actually going, getting off his seat, and realizing that these are things you need to do now while prices are still low, before market value is a little increased when people are at the end of the season and you're out of trade deadlines and you have to beg, borrow, and steal to bring in players no one's ever heard of after watching YouTube highlights of them or whatever videos they're watching. Do it now, because there's no excuse. We have money freed up, and I applaud Jay Heaps and even Michael Burns to a small degree now that they're actually looking and reanalyzing all of these contracts and saying, can we bring them at a lower level? If we can't, what are our options to do so? They're throwing everything back on the table, which is what fans, I believe, want. And you can hold the front office accountable and say they have a lot to prove to you, but you have to give them a chance to prove it to you.
Right.
So when they go out and they get Matt Reese and they go out and they get Shaury Joseph back, if they do, give them credit. Because we know it sure as hell when they do something wrong, we're all going to scream, rant, cry, and moan and complain. And I'll be the loudest.
Yeah, it's true. And I also, you know, one thing that we haven't done really is take a look. I mean, there's a bunch of players that are still technically a part of this team. And one of them was another guy who was a late season signing. He was kind of made a big splash for himself and gained some popularity among some of the fans was Ryan Guy. Yeah. And I'm glad that he's, it looks like they might keep him around. I mean, I guess they have until, is it until Saturday? I'm not sure exactly what the date is, but so Saturday, I think, to re-sign any of these players or something along those lines. I think today was the deadline.
Was Ryan Guy a guy they had to re-sign, or is that somebody's going to have an option mid-year next year or something like that? Or
yeah, he'll probably have an option mid-year next year.
I like Ryan on that post. I analyzed who the Revs, if you know, if you're Montreal and you had a pick from our pile, who would you pick out? And I said Ryan Guy clearly was probably the one most likely to get picked because of his low salary and the fact that he's versatile.
He's plays quick. Both sides. There you go.
And I mean, and he showed nothing but good when he had the time in the field last year.
Right.
So I think ideally, if you can, if you're looking at Ryan Guy playing outside mid, that's fantastic. But then you get somebody else playing outside mid, speedy. The goal of this in my head would be to make sure that central defensive midfield is Shawrie Joseph, and at center attacking mid, you can have Benny Fellhaber.
Yes.
There's no excuse with just competent, consistent outside wingers designed to play that position, where Tierney does a good job at it. I like Tierney a lot as far as I don't like the fact that he beat me in FIFA at the tournament, but he crosses the ball well. He plays a simplified role. He knows what he can do. He doesn't try to overcomplicate things. The problem is just speed. As far as an outside winger, a lot of times the best thing about seeing Inyasi was Shawrie could just spring him loose on a deep ball, and that keeps defenders deep in their zone because they have to worry about that threat constantly. When that speed threat doesn't exist, it kind of puts a little more pressure on Shawrie
and the midfield.
If you can simplify that stuff on the outside and let Benny Fellhaber and Shawrie Joseph just literally lock down that midfield and bring the attack forward, there's no excuse for that midfield to not be. As another team had Benny Fellhaber and Shawrie Joseph, they'd automatically have one of the top five midfields in the country.
Right. So you get a guy like Tierney comes in, and he's a great dead ball specialist, obviously, and that there's a role for that on your team. And maybe that's something you do if you've got you've got a speedy guy like Sané Niasse, who's out there on the he comes in as a second half sub. Maybe you pop in Chris Tierney as well, so that you get somebody that can really cross the ball and get it up there in front for that speedy forward.
Yeah, definitely two good subs with two different things they bring to the table. One's a little more consistent defensive play, distribution, and one of them's just a late game attacking threat in San Niasi. Yep. But I'd love to see what Jay Heaps in a fresh set of eyes thinks the roles are for these players. To a man, do you think that Chris Tierney's good enough to start at left back? Do you think he's good enough to start at left mid on this
he
team?
Should. I don't think he should. I don't think he should start at left back ever again. I think that unless there's nobody else on the team that could play, I like the idea of having a left-footed player back there.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's not somebody playing left mid that can come back and cover for him, yikes! It just scares me because he's not the slowest guy, but he's if you're going to put him up against a Patrick Nyarko or something along those lines, forget it.
Yeah, like an Oduro tore us up.
Yeah, he really did. And those guys would kill you. And even Sané Niasse, will do the same when he comes down from Montreal. That'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that road trip. So you look at Ryan Guy, another guy that, another first-year player that I think is the sole surviving first-year player from the last draft is Ryan Kinney. And
sole survivor.
He is the survivor of the New England Revolution's class of 2011. And a guy that people were calling for time and time again to get on the field. Apparently he's an excellent crosser of the ball. From the right side and maybe, and played forward. I think he was one of the leading goal scorers in his conference for Monmouth College, I believe. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I'm talking about the same guy. I might be wrong.
Well, I think you can just have confidence in the fact that all this stuff that you were confused and just baffled my head why it wasn't tried with Stevie Nichol, you at least know that a fresh set of eyes and Jay Heaps he's throwing this stuff back on the table and looking it over all of it. Everything's fresh. Everything's back. All the options are back on the table. It's not just, you know, we have guys in the draft class. We're never going to see him play. We'll never see Alan Coker at the senior level. Why would I want to see a 6'2 forward? You know?
Yeah.
I need to see that. But
guy that also won a U.S. Open Cup game for you basically by himself. So, yeah.
And there may be reasons. And I mean, whether or not they're, you know, personality things or locker room type issues or maturity things, that's a separate thing. But that's when we can talk about Charlie Davies.
Right. I think we should maybe save that for later. But the thing about, you know, I like the idea, like you said, it's fresh perspective, new set of eyes, whatever you want to call it. Jay Heaps, when we were at that game and he was talking about it, you know, said, you know, we asked him why would Ryan Kinney, in his opinion, why isn't Ryan Kinney ever getting a start at forward? And, you know, why are you playing him at right back and left back when he's an attacking player? And, you know, here's Jay Heaps, who started off as a forward and went back as an attacking, ended up playing defense, for his entire MLS career. So maybe that's what Steve Nichol was thinking all along. Who knows? But at the same time, you know, and we'll never know. It doesn't matter now. But to your point, and I think it bears re-mentioning, is that this guy's got a chance now to prove to the new coach and the new administration that he's got something to offer. And, you know, maybe Jay Heap saw something that he liked in him, and that's why he's still around, and now he's got to prove it on the field. Camp starts in January, right? So
yeah, there's value in guys like Ryan Kinney, even if they're not seeing consistent sub time, that there are those Open Cup games. There are these inner competitions that, you know, do suck up bodies, do make people fatigued, do make injuries worse. Right. That they're valuable guys at that $40,000, $50,000 range where you can take a Coger and a Kinney and throw them on there and, you know, hedge your bets. I mean, it's cheaper than having to rely. I mean, this is all under the assumption, too, that we're not playing Superliga, that we're not playing right. Champions League, that, you know, if we ever get to a point where we have external competitions, we're going to have to look at, you know, depth.
Really beefing it up, too.
Disgustingly exposed on this team, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have to beef that whole thing up because these guys are going to be dead meat if they don't. But so, you know, the remaining squad, that it's, you know, you got the Gambians are still here. Shalosky's still here. You've got Ryan Guy, Ryan Kinney, Darius Barnes, Zach Boggs, and Tim Murray. Did I say Tim Murray already? Bobby and Matt and Kevin, Benny, Shari, maybe, is under Ryko, maybe. And Zerka, maybe. And but then you've got AJ, Chris. So, I mean, yeah, we lost 10 players, and you know, we're probably renegotiating with, you know, three of those players. So, you know, there's probably going to be about 15 guys that were on this.
Well, out of the guys that are available in the actual re-entry draft right now from other teams, I know we've given up Cochran, Phelan, and Dubé. So in that, we're losing a forward, a midfielder, and a central back. Not necessarily a need to replace those positions specifically from this draft, but anyone on this list that sticks out, I mean, it's slim pickings.
Well, I mean, if we're going to take a look at the players available, there are a lot of good names in terms of, and I don't know how many of these guys are going to get re-signed, but in terms of defenders, I was actually looking at the guy from Chivas.
Chivas has available Ante Jazic.
Ante Jazic, but there was
Zach Thornton. Goalie, Helio.
Well, maybe, you know what? He's
Andrew
gone.
Boyens.
Nope, the guy I was thinking of is gone. He got traded. He got traded for James Riley. It was a Boehner, something like that. So James Riley is now on his way to Chivas.
The loudest noise on this list has to be for Bobby Convey, but Bobby Convey is an expensive animal.
And he sure is.
Talking to certain people, I get people are informing me about his petulant behavior in the locker room or his him not getting along with, you know, Frank Yallop, and how, whether it was based on the fact that he didn't want to play left back, he wanted to play left mid, or other stuff like that, is that it's taken into account. As if you bring him here and say, oh, you're going to play left back, he's going to say, no, I want to play left mid. The question to us is, where do you want him, and can you afford him at $300,000?
That is the big – I mean, that's the question.
The guy's got MLS experience. He's played Premier League soccer with, you know, United,
you know, U.S. men's national team player. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of upside to Bobby Convy. And, you know, there's also – I mean, he – wasn't he captain of Reading for a while? I mean, or something along those lines. He was
correct.
He was. He's a pretty big deal, and as far as, you know, American players that have a lot of potential and probably still have a lot to offer. But, you know, are you going to spend $300,000 on him, and, you know, and risk him not being totally happy in the situation? If he comes here, he's playing left back. That's where I see him fitting into this team. You know, unless, you know, you want to make him that guy, that has to cover for a guy like Chris Tierney and put Chris Tierney at left back and have Bobby playing in front of him.
Or they could find somebody that plays left back and left mid.
Hey, how about that? I think that's the first thing that they want to do. Definitely. And you know, when the scouting trip that they're going out to looking at, they're looking specifically for defender, center back, partner for AJ Soares, forward, and a midfielder, right? I mean, I think that's what they said.
They're looking for an entire team then.
Basically, they're looking for anybody that can play.
Yeah, that's based off that Kyle McCarthy tweet that said that Burns and Coach Jay Heaps are actually in Central America or Central/South America on a scouting trip currently, which is music to a lot of people's ears. We want to see a suntan coach.
Right. That's what we want. Guy that's out there, you know, working the angles, so to speak. But what I was going to say is that, you know, there's other guys on this list that, you know, Bobby Boswell could be a good central partner for AJ Soares. I think he'll probably end up staying in Houston, however. You look at some of these. I don't want anybody from New York, but what's this other guy? Andy Williams is out of contract. Mm-hmm. I think he'll may end up, you know, getting re-signed by Real Salt Lake.
Chris Albright's been everywhere. Jeez.
Yeah, yep. Chris Albright. I don't know. He's getting a little old. Jonathan Leathers, not a bad player. John Thornton. Thorington, not a bad player. Santino Quaranta, not a bad player. Granted, some of these guys have some more years than others.
Yeah, a lot of these guys, though, I got to think it's not because they're bad players, it's that they're overvalued players.
Their salaries are going to
get... Yeah, what's killing them, I mean.
Yep, so you have to see what happens with them, because my guess is that they'll end up renegotiating and getting signed with another team. But you know, the whole thing with this whole reentry draft, the player goes in, you know, for the first round, it doesn't get picked up. He doesn't have to go back in for the second round. Mm-hmm. He can opt out and then say, all right, I'm going to negotiate with my old team or something along those lines.
Yeah. But after both rounds, he's pretty much just unaffiliated with a club, right?
Right.
Like almost a real free agent.
Right. So the way it was explained, when I was talking with Brian Bilello about this, is that, you know, the players will then, the team will basically say, look, we're comfortable at offering you a position at a slightly reduced salary. We're looking at you at this number. And it's like, you can risk going back into the reentry draft, getting picked up and maybe getting picked up, or you can sign with this. And more often than not, the players, I mean, last year, the way it works is the players knew if they were going to get picked up or not. And then, you know, the Revs did this with DC United. They picked up Fred. Mm-hmm. Fred knew that, you know, he would have gotten re-signed by DC United if they had the opportunity to pick him up, but they didn't. refs beat him to it, and that was all they wrote.
He definitely ended up back in D.C., though.
Yeah, a little trade. I think we got some allocation money out of it or something along those lines. But, you know, that's something the Reds are really good at. Anyway, the point being is that I think there's some serviceable names here. It's whether or not the team can the Reds can get these guys at a number that is going to work for them. And
they got to lock up the Caraglio, Zirka, Lakich. You know, issue first, because that pretty much tells you how much you can spend elsewhere.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're gonna get Milton. I really don't. I think Milton is
too much of a monster.
I don't think he's. I think he's a good player, and I think he's he could be a very serviceable forward. But it's the same argument we were just making for these guys that are on this list of players in the re-entry process. These guys are just making too much money. And
you don't know. I don't know. Like $54,000 is wage from the players.
That's
union.
Yeah.
And then you know who knows what there's the loan fee
and
really.
There's some other stuff there that he's probably getting his salary on top of.
I think I'd love to see that guy another year. Actually, a little more match fit. Maybe drop about 10-15 pounds.
Yeah.
A little more mobile. He could be. So they all could be something when they're on a good team, properly coached with the attention they need with. Conditioning focused on and strategies and stuff real teams do, which I look forward to the reign of Heaps. But if we want to play Sophie's Choice, I got to ask you right now, between Caraglio, Lakich, and Zirka, rank them 1 to 3 on who you'd least want to give up as opposed to the one you're okay with losing.
Okay, in terms of who I'd least want to give up or who I think is most likely will leave?
Who are you most hell-bent on keeping? Who's the most important to you?
Out of those three?
Mm-hmm.
That's tough. I'm going to say Zirka.
Wow.
But I think he's, you know, like we talked about earlier, Zirka is a guy that, you know, can probably be replaced. But
with a cheaper alternative as well.
Maybe.
And that's my thing is, like, Reiko Lakich has proven pedigree of scoring. I think he left Silkeborg thinking he was going to duplicate what he did here. Whereas I don't think that Zirka came here ready to duplicate what he did in his other leagues.
Right.
So Lakich is expensive, but Zirka, I think there's somebody that's going to be available out there somewhere playing soccer that can do what Monster Zirka does, which he does well,
yep.
But do it for cheaper.
Yep. I'll concede that that point that we could probably find somebody cheaper. The thing is that with Lakich is you need somebody up there with him. You need to have somebody up there with him. And whereas Caraglio, I don't know if he's worth the money that may cost us to get him out of the contract for this next ridiculous loan deal.
Let's take money out of it, just as far as how relevant and important they would be to your team.
But I would say Caraglio first.
Yeah.
And then I would say Caraglio, Lekic, and Zirka.
Yeah.
If Caraglio is not there, then I would say Zirka, then Lekich.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think Lekich is as effective without Caraglio.
No, I mean, Lekich, I had a post early on. I think he's a good forward. At the end of the day, he's a good forward.
Yep.
It needs to be paired with somebody because he's not a guy that's going to put 3 to 4 touches on the ball and shoot. He's going to head the ball in. He's going to shoulder the ball in, knee the ball in, volley the ball in, tap the ball in. That's what he does. He's a garbage man, and he's been a damn good one in Denmark
yep.
at it.
Yep.
So all you got to do is create the traffic. You need some consistent stuff up there for order him to play off of. And I think he might be one of those guys that bags, like, you know, 10 Garbo goals, which I'll take all day.
Yeah.
And
I'll take one.
Gun is a guy alongside him that you can actually – put a little speech through that creates the chaos that he just cleans up. Who knows? And that's another question we got to bring up at this point is how much is too much for Diego Fagundes and what his role is going to be in the team next year, depending on who's available.
Right. Let's take another quick little break here and we'll come back. We'll talk about Diego.
We're
all over the place. And we've been rambling. This one was a half an hour. So we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about Diego. We'll talk about what else we have left to talk about. We have,
is Charlie Davis.
Oh, we got to check the Twitter feed. We got a whole bunch of Twitter stuff to talk about. So we'll be right back after this short break. Cheers. And we're back to close out the final part here of this episode of The Midnight Ride, where we are all over the place. There's so much going on. And the stream of consciousness is overwhelming. Shall we? And let's just get into the next piece. I mean, we were just about to talk about Diego Fagundes and how much time he might actually see. I think it depends on, A, who Heaps is able to bring in, first of all, in the offseason. And then you mentioned, Brendan, in the break that, you know, this could all very well be, you know, what kind of system Heaps is looking to play. I could see Diego, and I think you mentioned this too, is that Diego could end up seeing a ton of minutes. You know, he's going to be a year older, so he's 15, 16, 17 years old. So
he'll be
a little on the young side. I mean, but he might be.
Compare him to two people. It's Freddie Adu and Juan Agudelo. One's from 10 years ago almost, and one's from, not 10 years ago, I'm sorry, about 5, 6, 7 years ago, and one's this last few years. Agudelo doesn't see constant time at Red Bull.
Not at all.
There's a reason for that. I mean, I kind of respect it. You shield the guy, you let him grow up, and don't throw him into the water too early. But he's also started for the U.S. men's national team for friendlies.
Yes, he has.
He's proven that he's capable. I think Agudelo, you know, let's just talk, you know, health-wise, puberty-wise, is a little more developed than Diego. And I know we're all working on a concoction we can give Diego that will accelerate his puberty so that he can start contributing.
So he can grow a real man's mustache.
Yes. The sooner we see facial hair, the better, the brighter the Rev's future is.
Yes, he needs to grow a big, shaggy, like Adam Moffat beard.
But I think he's a guy, regardless of who you get up top, a bare minimum next year, he's a guy that's peppered in every game.
Yeah.
And I know his size was a concern because he can get hurt out there with a 130-pound frame, but he's a guy that's either going to chase down defenders at full speed constantly and be a pain for any midfielder trying to get the ball out of his zone, or he's a guy that when people are tired, you can throw a long ball to and just let him chase it down and create chaos.
Exactly,
so,
and he's a guy
he has
that,
a role either
you
way.
Know, if you end up, you know, going with Sandy Niasse as your starting right wing, he's a guy that can come in and give Sandy a spell, you know, so to speak, or you know, pop in for a tired Moncef Zirka or something along those lines and give you a little bit more juice. And you know, you're right. His size is a real concern, but he's got the speed. He's got some savvy to him, too, where he can get in and defensively he might be a bit of a liability just because he is so tiny.
But, yeah, I'm not expecting much defensively, but he has he's a the role, type of guy that up or down.
Right. Right, exactly. And he's the type of guy that can go in and win a ball just from being, a pain in the butt, you know.
I never thought I'd be talking, you know, pituitary glands on the podcast.
There you go.
5 months is a long offseason. We'll call, November, December, January, February, March by the time season starts. A pubescent kid can do a lot in 5 months. I mean,
you're telling me.
Finish a growth spurt.
I've got a mutant here who's growing like living at my house. He's growing an inch a day. It's ridiculous, but it's
some kind of like dog year thing. So they could be a different. He might have 10, 15, 20 pounds. So
who knows?
Each could have him on the weight gainer. Who knows? But he's definitely somebody that like we're. I'm almost hesitant.
Joe Wiener's creatine formula, whatever it is.
Yeah, I don't want to sit there and say, oh, we got Joseph Philhub or Fagundes. But you might eventually be saying that by year's end. I just don't want to jinx the kid because no one wants to Freddie Aduify him. So
we can't. He's.
Anything he brings to the table is a plus at this point. It's not an expectation.
That's exactly right.
Good. It doesn't become an expectation until he's voting.
Exactly. Yeah. Until we're paying him a lot more money. But anyway, the upshot is that there's going to be a spot for him somewhere. I would say maybe wait until the summer months. I don't know what his school commitments are still, but they're. And plus, he's probably still going to be seeing some time with the U18s.
Yep.
We'll see. I think they still have plans for him there. So there may be a limitation to how many times he can play if he's still on the U18s. So who knows? Mm-hmm. We'll have to see how that all plays out. But we threw out a couple questions out there. We asked people for their feedback on Twitter. So we want to thank those guys that did chirp in, so to speak. We had some great feedback from who's the first guy that did it? Was earlier today was the guy M. Dubes. Dubes. He asked a question about those guys, whether or not they're going to be back, Milton, Shari, Ryko, Franco. We answered that. And then Sarker Sartorial asked what the Reds were looking for in South Central America, defenders, offensive threats, or empanada recipes. So we thank you for that. I believe it.
If they bring back empanada recipes, we'll call it a win. That's more than, watching DVDs. So
I think they are looking for all three of those in reverse order. So we'll have to see how it all plays out. I'm looking forward to those empanadas, Mr. Heaps. You know, we also have Ben Softly, I guess his name is Ben S. Offley on Twitter. We were talking about all that. And then Caraglio and who's going to be back and who's not going to be back. And for giggles, when it was announced that Charlie Davies was waived, well, not waived, but his option wasn't picked up at the purchase price that was originally set. Apparently, he's still in contract negotiations with TC. He might end up going back there. But
I think regardless, Chouchou owns him as of December 1st. They didn't renew or transfer the loan deal.
They did not pick up the permanent option.
His MLS rights, right. His player rights.
They did not make the permanent option. They did not do that pickup there. So the upshot is that he's not going. There's an opportunity for him to go to a different team, perhaps. And if, they don't negotiate a contract with him and the Revs say, hey, we want to make this guy our DP, over a 5-year period, we're going to pay him, $1.5 million or something like that. I don't know. Would they do it? And would you want him? And no. I know what you're going to say right off the bat, but we had some good feedback today on this from the Pound TMRP hashtag.
I like that. No one else can hijack it.
That's right. It's not a Welsh bar.
Yeah, so it's not some bar in Cardiff City. Leave it alone, girls.
Floozies. you Pound Revs floozies. You got to work tomorrow. Go home. Anyway, the upshot is a lot of guys, we've got a lot of mixed bag responses here. The question was, what would you say if the Revs were to sign Charlie Davies as a DP or to a long-term contract? And the tons of responses, which I was very happy. Most people were boo. I would say boo. I would say they didn't want him here at all. And Steve Erickson, our good friend, said, "I'd say, what were you drinking, or what were you thinking, or something along those lines."
What were you thinking?
What were you thinking? I think personally, and somebody made a comment here. He had a pretty good goal scoring rate. Granted, a lot of those were from the penalty spot. There's one that we all know he dove for, at least two. It's an interesting component to any kind of forward. Now, if I was to ask you right off the bat, if we're playing Brazil in the Confederations Cup and Charlie Davies, gets fouled in the box and goes and takes a dive to get the call and gets a penalty kick and we end up winning that game, do you still hate him?
I don't hate him. I'm not proud of it. I'm not going to complain about the result, but I'm not going to be happy with how it was garnished, to be honest with you. Especially in America, too. We always have this, soccer imperialism where we think we're better than the countries like the Mediterranean countries. I'll even say, the Italy's, the Spanish national team, Portuguese national team, which typically, will play that type. It's a part of their game. Is right. Drawing fouls, trying to get people to card it and stuff like that. I'd like to think we stray away from that in the U.S., and he perpetuates it. But that's a simple question. Go ahead. I'll jump in.
I think it's what he brings to the table is that there's he's an offensive threat. He's not as fast as he was. I think that he's still got a lot to offer. And, it's a question.
It's a different deal, though, when it's in New England, because people want it to be the conclusion to a great feel-good story that never was.
It kind of is. I mean, I think – I don't know how sentimental I'm going
to
be.
New Hampshire kid, U.S. men's national team, could have went to the World Cup. A long story short is unfortunate situation with the car accident.
Very.
Pre-World Cup, this guy
– And a lot of it's his own fault.
Absolutely. And If you had told me in 2009 that this guy would turn to be the most polarizing figure as forward in MLS, I would have been like, what? Hero Charlie Davies? Yep. The perfect companion to a cup of Jose Altidore? No. But long story short is, he messed up big time.
That game. Cup of Jose Altidore.
He showed a complete lack of judgment and immaturity. How much... I mean, as a football team in high school, we used to have like curfews where we checked on everybody.
Oh, I know it.
But before a qualifying game where you're going to win the group in D.C., he's off doing that the night before. That shows some bad judgment. I'm gonna look at Boca a little bit. Like, Boca Negra, control your team. Mm-hmm. Third, bad situation. He never really takes responsibility for it, which, all right, everyone has these types of things that happens. It starts becoming a pattern when he's back into show and there's the fiasco where he's caught speeding at 125 miles an hour in Paris. Now, he ends up not being the one driving, but the guy in the front seat, a player of his, asked Charlie to get in the front seat because his license is suspended. And apparently he learned nothing from being irresponsible and showing poor judgment. He gets in the front seat again.
Yeah.
I mean, not again. He gets in the front seat and takes the arrest, gets his license suspended, all this kind of stuff. I think he's eventually cleared for it because the other guy admits that he was the one driving. But still, you're showing the same pattern of just bad decision-making and immaturity. And throughout this all, he's had the opportunity to be the feel-good story and set a great example to kids about drunk driving, about making bad decisions, about who you're getting in the car with. This all boggles my mind. And then a day before or a week before the last DC United game of the season, the press release that he's suing the nightclub.
Yep.
2 years after suing the nightclub for not recognizing that the woman that drove the car had too much to drink, and then pretty much saying that he has a loss of revenue because he's never going to be the same player value that he would have been prior to the accident.
Right.
That's asinine to me. Because while you're at it, let's go sue the state troopers for not catching you guys swerving all over the road. Let's just get everybody that didn't do what you should have done yourself and been responsible. And it's unfortunate that somebody had to die in this situation. But he's never said the right thing whatsoever. And at the end of the day, he barely even contributed to the DC United team at the end of that season. He was a sub off the bench even after that.
Yeah.
So I don't want the immaturity. I don't want the bad decision-making. I don't want the locker room tension he could possibly bring. And frankly, at the money he's getting paid, he's not contributing enough. I would have loved for Charlie Davies to be the feel-good story, BC World Cup veteran from New Hampshire, come back to MLS and play for New England Revolution and make me, you know, jump out of my seat every Saturday. It's not going to happen. The ship has sailed. And I hope it never comes back to New England.
All right, then.
Sorry.
No, that's good. It was a good rant. I like it. And all valid points about, you know, his everything that said. I never going to judge. I mean, I can't judge. I can't ever make that call. I mean, I've never been in a situation where I've had been in a position to sue anybody, really. So it's... I don't know what the heck is going on. I think he's had some bad legal advice and some bad management advice.
The best part about that lawsuit, though, I'm sorry to interrupt you, was the club was promoting. I mean, he's doing the nightclub.
Red Bull.
It's also the Red Bull. Yeah. This is before DC was going to play New York Red Bull. He's suing them. I'm like, oh,
that's great.
This is fantastic.
That's great. So, but anyway, I mean, all valid points and stuff you definitely need to consider when you're signing a player. You need to know what you're going to get, the whole package. And it's, you know, is he ever going to grow up to the point where he's going to be a part of an effective part of this team? But at the same time, you're investing $500,000 in a captain who's, you know, running around sneaking into movies and getting arrested for, you know, having conversations.
Shari Joseph sneak into movies week in, week out, as opposed to be even a worse role model.
All right, let's talk about the substance abuse and the problems that he had with that. And
to be honest with you, which side of the fence are you on in this one? When your captain does that kind of stuff in the offseason, one, who's ultimately responsible is Shari. Two, Do you take his captain's band away?
Absolutely.
You got to set the example and tell him that this shit's not tolerated. I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
This is not tolerated inside a locker room, that you can't do that kind of stuff.
And, you know, I think you and I were talking about that at the whatchamacallit, the FIFA tournament. We were talking about the lack of kind of responsibility as a whole in that locker room. And, you know, it's It's been a shift. It's been a shift going the other way. It's a very segregated locker room right now, and you get that feel. I mean, and that's my personal. When I walk into the locker room and I see these guys over here, and they're already done. They're walking out the door. They're not waiting for anybody else. They're gone. And you know, maybe those are the guys that were on the bench, but you know, you got other guys that are sitting around waiting for you know these two players to be finished, and then they all walk out together or whatever.
You do bring up a good point, though, because it's hypocritical of me to levy so much pain and anguish on Charlie. I just the repercussions of Charlie's actions, I said, are a far worse example as far for like kids or anyone else, because they're looking at drunk driving, looking at getting in cars, making bad decisions.
Right.
Things are a little more important. I mean, I'm not going to lessen what Shaw Reed does, because if in any mindset, I'm going, you know, you're losing your captain's man for 6 months, or there's got to be a repercussion just to show everyone else in the locker room that. Yeah, this stuff will happen, and there will be repercussions for it. Like, right. we do watch that kind of stuff, just to set that kind of precedent. But
absolutely.
You wish Shawry wouldn't do it. I'd be a little less hypocritical right now.
Yeah, exactly. But for me, you have to expect a little bit of this nonsense, mm-hmm. but, you know, how much is too much? That's something that, you know, you've got to, if I'm Jay Heaps, I'm looking at this guy saying, am I going to get what I need out of him to justify the expense of A, going out to sign him, and then also the repercussions of, you know, whatever nonsense he's going to bring to the team. And these are things that, you know, different scale from what I'm, you know, I coach 14-year-olds. It's not the same. In fact, they don't have a choice. They have to play for me or they're not going to play. But it's
they can't transfer.
Yeah. It's just like, sorry, you're on the A team. You want to play on the B team? Tough. You're playing on the A team or you don't play.
It's ethical decisions at this point. Yeah, granted, he's going to be a good player. He's obviously a good player. But there's a reason why he wasn't good enough to start every week in, week out in D.C.
There was something going on. Absolutely. Correct. Absolutely something going on. But
he's just from him, he's like, oh, you know, he's upset about he should have got more playing time. He never really says it the right way. He needs a PR coach, and if he has one, he needs a better one.
Yes.
But you have to.
He needs a whole PR staff.
Hungry to play. I like that. He's hungry to play, wants to get involved. He's mad when he's not getting minutes. That's good. That's a good thing in a player. It's a competitive thing that you really can't coach that you want in most of your goal-scoring people. But there's a reason why he didn't start a lot of games. You look at the minutes towards the end of the season here. I mean didn't play in the last game of the season. 51 nope. minutes, 11 minutes, 13 minutes, a full 90, 0, 0, 0, 54.
It's all over the place. Granted, you know, you're not Ben Olsen either. You know, Ben Olsen might have say, okay, you know, Charlie's not going to do well against this kind of team, whatever. But I think if you're investing that kind of money in a player, you want to be able to have a guy that you can put out every single day and not worry about, you know, the team that he's going up against, because you know that he's going to have the skill set or whatever to be that type of player where he can make a difference. I think in the long run, it's safe to say that he's not going to come to New England because, A, DC United's got the rights, and, B, New England's track record is they're not going to invest a ton of money into a designated player unless they
And they're not get involved in another loan situation that's confusing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they had that with Milton, and they could probably get another one with Milton if they play their cards right, or another type of player like Milton. But I don't think it'll end up being Charlie Davies as much as, you know, like you said, it would be a feel-good story for all the ages.
If it happens, I'll be happy.
I think it was you. You tweeted out he's got 11 goals in 24 games. I mean, that's pretty good.
Pretty good.
That's pretty good. But you take away the PKs, and it was it's a different story. And then you also have to look at, you know, what he was doing at the end of the season when they need him, when they are making a playoff run. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's not getting on the field.
The weird part is when Dwayne DeRosario showed up that he started getting as much time. And D-Rose is just a beast. I mean, I can't imagine you wouldn't want D-Rose distributing that ball to him.
Because he was
playing with Pontius and Josh Wolf, I think. So.
Yep. And Pontius was a big loss for them as well, obviously. But, you know, you get Charlie out there with those two guys. It's like somebody that's up front that you can play
off of. Yeah, he had a half-point game, and all three assists came from Chris Pontius.
Right. So who knows? Who knows? Anyway.
Polarizing question, whenever you bring it up now.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like him. He's a polarizing guy. You get a polarizing question of a polarizing guy. It's a sad story in the end.
know, because at the end of the day, a young girl got killed. So
yep, and you know, there's a whole lot of aftermath that's going on, and it's perpetuating, and he's perpetuating a lot of it himself. Who knows what's going to happen there?
And if the Reds are going to get headlines, let's not be about the litigation. you know, Charlie Davis would be going through.
No, let's make them about a brand new jersey. One swatch at a time, my man.
Whoa, what a segue.
Oh, I'm so excited. I cannot wait for Saturday. Good. I have high hopes, I have to say. I mean, we saw what the DC United, speaking of DC United, we saw what their jersey looked like. And it looks as if the Revs jersey could be pretty much the same kind of template, shall we say. Mm-hmm. As that particular shirt, as long as it's not the Columbus Crew new away kit.
Those are the worst things in the world. It's like druggistfootball.com. Go see those.
Yes.
Oh, they're hideous.
It's really bad. Check out the druggistfootball.com. They're all over the place now. They're all popping up. And funny, Jeff Lemieux, Jeff, if you're listening, I know you are because you love this podcast more than you love your own. Jeff said earlier today that he had seen the Adidas store. He saw a two MLS jerseys. One was Chicago. One was New York. And, you know, Jeff lives in Foxborough, so it's we're not a good sign when your local Adidas store, probably down at the outlets, there is not pimping your local product. But I said, hey, you know, if you guys didn't take 2 weeks to unveil your shirt, you might be looking at your shirt in that window.
And I think the kit thing, yep. I got to find the website. And if I can find it, I'll repost it on my blog. It's just somebody did they redesigned the logo. I can't remember who did it, but I got to find this link. And the color scheme they used for a third kit, it was a brown and like a colonial blue. It looks like a Continental Army uniform. And
yeah.
I was like, that is fantastic. Because it's so different. It deviates from the Patriot scheme, so it's your own identity, but it's so unique and it sticks to that whole revolution colonial era. And there's nobody else with that color scheme. I'm like, wow, that actually looks good.
And, brown. I don't know about brown.
You're going to see the picture and you're going to change your mind because it's fantastic. It's Continental Army brown. And you know, that's
yeah, you can call it Continental Army brown if you want.
I think it's the Crayola box. I'm never going to be happy until this team rebrands like Sporting Kansas City did, where they take on a different color scheme, except from the Patriots, and you know, make their logo a little more grown up and less 1990s.
Absolutely.
And granted, I think that might happen. It might coincide with the stadium moving, because like Kansas City did, they did a complete rebranding when they moved into Live Strong Park and it paid dividends. I think they might do that all at once, but
yep. Anyway, anything you want to get out before we sign off for tonight?
Pimping?
Pimping wise,
the indirectkick.com. I'll try to get a picture of that kit.
Yeah,
give credit to that to the proper person.
Colonial Continental Blue.
Oh, Continental Army, baby. It's gorgeous. And then I'll be wearing the Rebellion hat on Saturday as we're accepting a customized jersey from the front office. They made one for us in the Midnight Riders, so we'll be there on Saturday to accept it, take pictures with it.
They sent one to that guy at Channel 7 News.
Yeah, they sent to a lot of media folks.
Yeah. I've got more followers than that guy.
Right?
I didn't get one. Uh-oh. Come on.
I'm going to accept it, take some pictures, and then I'm going to head up to the American Outlaws Boston Ball in Antuanua in Kenmore Square in Boston on Saturday night to benefit America Scores Boston.
Yes, so that's a very worthy cause, and I actually now feel a little bit guilty that I'm not going.
Well, it's marketed as the premier off-season event. If you're a U.S. fan, if you're a Reds fan, that's probably where
I'm a member of AO. And I'm a member of, you know, the Riders and all that stuff. And, man, I just hope you guys have a really good time.
It was a great time last year. Expect a lot of people coming in from different chapters around the country this year. And then, the best thing about those AO guys you meet and girls from other chapters, they're also MLS fans. So there's always, you know, some crap talking, which has been harder for us to do lately. But
yep. Okay. You guys will start singing those your
there's
songs.
A bunch of raffle stuff too that's going on. We'll be raffling off some of the new Revolution kits there. the Riders and ourselves, the Rebellion. So
nice.
It'll be cool. It's a good thing to get involved. I think it's $30 to buy in advance, and I want to say $40 at the door. And then it's all a donation to America Scores Boston.
Where is the door?
The door is at Antuanua, which is a bar in Kenmore Square in Boston.
There you go.
It's good on the AO Boston for putting it together for, I think it's the third year doing it.
Right. So and you can, we can find out, people can find out about that at the AO Boston website, right?
AO Boston website, Facebook.com, American Outlaws Boston. The Rebellion's pushed it on their website. The Minute Riders have pushed it on their website. And just a caveat, you don't have to be a member of any group to go. We want your money. I mean, we want you to go and have a good time.
Right. Right. We want your money to go to American Scores. Very good. I love those guys.
Yeah, they're doing good scores. Work. I mean, they're, keeping kids occupied in inner city Boston. They try to keep them off the streets and not incorporated in violence. So get involved, and there'll be plenty of stuff in the off season as far as stuff like that to get involved with, whether it's FIFA tournaments, balls, dances, you know.
That's right. And as if you're looking to get involved with this podcast, as we all know you are, you can always send us an email at pod@themidnightride.us. You can hit us up on Twitter at TMR Podcast. You can call, if I can remember the phone number, 205-339-1775 or 204-334-339-1775. I think that's right. Anyway, if it's not right, send me an email and I'll get you the right number.
Or leave a voicemail at the other person's.
Leave a voicemail at the other person's number and tell that Hank he's an idiot.
Or just ask him that question. No, Charlie Davies.
Exactly. Exactly. Anyway, well, guys, thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you guys next time. Brendan, thanks for coming back on. I appreciate
it. Thank you, Hank.
It's always fun to have you come on and just rant.
Oh, is that what I'm known for? Good.
I don't have to talk as much, and I like that. So there you go. And everybody else, thanks again. My God, this is a long podcast. Well,
Charlie Davies' fault.
Charlie Davies.
I don't take responsibility. I'm pulling Davies.
There you go. I'm going to edit it all out. Anyway, guys, thanks again. We'll catch you next time on The Midnight Ride. Cheers.